You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
This podcast is being brought to you by Voyage AC.
Hey, listen to this. Organic cane sugar, safflower oil, chamomile.
Sounds delicious. What is that a recipe for?
It's this super yummy face scrub.
What?
Right? From Voyage AC.
Okay.
It exfoliates your face and nourishes your skin.
I was going to say that your skin is glowing, honey. I think that scrub's definitely working.
Oh, thank you, hon. Mm-hmm. You'll want to check out all of Voyage AC's gorgeous face and body products, beautiful scents, and phenomenal candles. So how can our listeners find Voyage AC?
You can find Voyage AC on our brand new website at theonlyonepod.com, or you can go to www.voyageac.com directly. That's VOYAGEETCIE.com.
And as you know, Melanie is willing to give my friends and family discount to all our listeners right now.
What?
Yep, that's 10% off everything you buy.
Right. All you need to do is enter The Only One at checkout.
That's right. All you have to do is enter The Only One when you make your purchase. Voyage AC is the ultimate luxury blend of travel, design, and sense.
This podcast is supported by Cute Booty Lounge. And allow me to take a moment to thank Cute Booty Lounge for signing on to sponsor another season of The Only One in the Room.
Yay!
Yep, we love talking about them.
Yes, we do. And I love wearing them.
Mm-hmm.
Feel these, hon. Just run your hands up and down them.
Ooh, that's soft.
Right?
I don't know if I've ever said this before, though, but that is some sexy material.
Right? These lifestyle stretch booty leggings are some of the most comfortable leggings I've ever felt in my entire life. Mm. It's like you're wearing a soft cloud on your legs. And it comes with a matching crop top so you can be comfortable from head to toe. So let me just tell you a little bit about Cute Booty Lounge. They're made right here in the USA by women and for women.
Mm-hmm.
Company's incredible, female and minority owned. Everything they make makes your booty look amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Dresses, tops, lounge. Well, the tops make everything else look amazing. Lounge and sleepwear. And their leggings have these super cute patented scrunch butt pockets. I get stopped in them all the time. There's a cute booty style for everyone. Cute Booty Lounge has you covered. Embrace your body. Love your booty.
And to make the deal even sweeter, head over to cutebooty.com and enter the code TheOnlyBooty to get 15% off your first order.
That's such a great deal. What is it again, hon?
Yeah, get yours now. Head to cutebooty.com and enter the code TheOnlyBooty and get 15% off your first order.
Awesome.
My name is MJ Fievre, and I'm the only one who accidentally saw a man being burned alive. I remember being unable not to watch. At first, he's just yelling because he knows what's gonna happen. And then the cries change from the realization that something's going to happen to something actually happening. For one moment, everything froze. I could feel like I was almost next to him. I could feel his pain. It really dawned on me what it meant to be in Haiti.
I'm probably one of the few people I know who still looks forward to my Sunday newspaper. Not a digital copy that I read on my phone, but the real finger-staining, loud crinkling, section-by-section newspaper. The Sunday paper for me is a treat to be enjoyed while lounging in bed, and sipping hot lemon water. So one day when we were going through all of the Only One stories that are being submitted to us, thank you for those, by the way. We love reading them. It was Scott's idea to record and release a few of them occasionally, but always on Sundays, and call them our Sunday edition. And because they're only 30 minutes long, our hope is that you can enjoy them while sipping your morning beverage, going for a walk, or even just enjoying a lazy Sunday at home. Please enjoy today's Sunday edition and be sure to listen every Tuesday when we drop another brand new episode of The Only One in the Room. MJ Fiev, how are you?
Doing pretty well. How are you?
Oh, really well. Very happy to see you and hear you today. I wanted to just start by asking you, I'm not really familiar with Haitian food. Tell me like the one dish from Haiti that you can always eat, even if you're full. Like you're stuffed to the gills, but then here comes this one dish and you can make room for it. What is it?
Oh my God, so many choices. Let me think. My first instinct is to say jumu soup, soup jumu, which is a Haitian stew. It's delicious. And we have it every Sunday. We also have it every January 1st to celebrate Haiti's independence.
Wonderful. And what's in this jumu stew?
Well, jumu is a kind of pumpkin that is very typical in the Caribbean. So there's pumpkin, there's also a lot of meat. Some people put pasta in it. There's a lot of carrots and potatoes. It's just delicious.
So that's like...
You should see the smile on your face.
I know.
It's so good. It's delicious, yes. It's one of the first dishes I learned how to make because otherwise I felt that I wouldn't be able to survive away from home.
Wow. So it's very important. It's culturally important and it has like a personal nostalgia for you too, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. I can kind of smell it cooking as you're talking.
It smells so good.
Oh, thank you for that. Thank you for that glimpse. And food is so important to culture, I think. I like talking to people about the food of their different cultures because it really gives you a gateway. It's like a happy gateway into the what the family's like, what the gatherings are like, how people connect and all of that, and the agriculture of the country itself. So thank you for that. And I am Laura Cathcart-Robbins, and this is The Only One in the Room, but I'm never the only one in this room because, as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hi, honey.
Hey, honey. You already know we're talking to MJ, who just lit us up with her description of, what was it called again?
Subjumo.
Yeah, that.
Pumpkin soup, to be more
pumpkin, pumpkin
or squash.
Soup. Yes.
Some people use squash.
Okay. All right. MJ. So I'm just going to tell you about her. Born in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, MJ Fierve's publishing career began as a teenager. Since then, MJ has authored 9 books in French that are widely read in Europe and the French Antilles. Is that right?
Antilles, yes.
Antilles. She works with underserved populations in need of writing as a form of therapy, even if they don't realize that they need writing or therapy. A longtime educator and frequent keynote speaker, MJ is available for book club meetings, podcast presentations like this one, interviews, and author events. So you'll see links to her in the show notes. So if you're looking for someone for your next event, MJ is available. And you're going to want to bring her in after you hear her story, for sure. So welcome, MJ.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Like I said, we're so glad you're here. So I always start by asking our guests how they identify.
He, she, Haitian American. I'm a daughter and I'm a sister. I'm a wife, teacher, educator.
Okay. And so, you know, I told you before we started recording that I wanted to just, I couldn't talk to you today without bringing up what's happening right now on the U.S. border, where thousands and thousands of Haitian immigrants are trying to migrate into the United States. So I'm just going to read you a little bit of what I found. It says thousands of Haitian immigrants encamped at Del Rio, Texas, after entering the U.S. through the Rio Grande, which is the river, are awaiting either deportation from U.S. authorities or deciding to stay put and seek asylum. The exodus of Haitian people fleeing the country can also be attributed to the staggering increase in human rights violations in Haiti within the past 10 years. In August, the State Department issued a level 4 travel advisory for Haiti, urging Americans not to visit Haiti because of kidnapping, crime, civil unrest, and COVID-19. But Haitians pointed to the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse and a recent destructive earthquake both this year and then, of course, the hurricanes that came afterward as the reason why they are fearful of returning to Haiti. So I just wanted to ask you, I know that's a lot, but as someone who claims Haiti, who was born there, who spent a lot of her life there, how do you feel? What are your thoughts about what's happening at the border right now?
I was outraged when I first heard about it, and my heart just broke because last week was particularly a difficult week for me personally because I've been helping my mom. I'm a caregiver. So I was disconnected from the news. And when I originally heard the story, it was through pictures that people were posting. So my first reaction was, what? What is this? Then I learned about what was going on. And it felt surreal, particularly when I saw this one picture of one of the border patrolmen with a whip. And there were also pictures of kids, one particular kid on the back of a man who was probably the father crossing the river. And I felt such sadness that the people from Haiti, my people, are still going through this after years and years of just bad luck. Bad governance, one tragedy after another, and it continues, and I don't see the end of it. And I spent so many nights I couldn't sleep after learning about it. It's heartbreaking for someone who cares about the country, but someone who was born here and who spent her entire life hoping that things were going to change. I'm sorry.
No.
So, yeah, it's considering the impact that the United States government particularly has had on what happens in Haiti. The fact that those people are just sent back without being helped, without even a conversation about what should happen to them other than sending them back to a country where there's no vaccine available, where the gang activities have intensified. We are the victims of violence, the victims of natural disasters, not even a little consideration for those people. They're just treated like numbers, like animals, and just being sent home. It was really unacceptable, and it remains unacceptable.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate your thoughts and your feelings, and when you welled up, I welled up too, because I felt that from you. And what I think is a Black American, for me, it was also surreal and it felt very removed. But now the more images I see, the more I understand about why it is and how difficult the road must have been for people to get from Haiti through either South or Central America all the way up through Mexico to our border. You know, with this idea that we're going to provide a better life, there's some salvation or hope here, only to be treated the way that we see them being treated at the border is heartbreaking. And I don't know what the better way is, but I know there is a better way. So I was really looking forward to hearing what you said, and I appreciate you being so honest and vulnerable on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. I love my country. I mean, I have so many good memories of being in Haiti, and there are so many aspects of Haiti that are just stunning and that leave a mark. But the truth is, Haiti is also a very violent place, a place with a lot of poverty and a lot of suffering. People who can't make it in Haiti, they just can't make it. There's rarely any upward mobility for anyone there. You're either from the middle class or the upper class and you can live in Haiti, or you're part of the thousands and thousands of people who just can't make a living. And being returned to that, I can't imagine what it means.
No. And actually, thank you for bringing up the violence, though, because that kind of ties into the story that you and I had discussed you telling on the show today. So we're going to go back to 1986 when Baby Doc, or Jean-Claude Duvalier, right, was the president of Haiti. He was overthrown. He fled to France with the help of the United States, apparently, because he fled on a U.S. Air Force One flight, which I had no idea about until I just started researching your story. You were 5 years old. So this is what I want you to tell me about. I want you to, we talked about how your parents were very open with you about death. They wanted you to know when you weren't safe, and I guess, you know, that no one was safe, basically, right? So death was discussed a lot. But at this time, you were 5 years old and you were in, is it Chrissois?
Yes.
Yeah. So tell me about that time and then lead us into your playing with your Barbie dolls on the balcony by yourself and what happened. Yeah.
So I'm 5 years old and I'm not really a kid. In Haiti, it's difficult to have a normal childhood because in order to survive a country like Haiti, you have to be aware of the violence. You have to be aware of the possibility of death. You have to be aware of your surroundings. So Haitian parents are very open about what's going on in the country. They don't spare the kids when they're having conversations about politics, about protests in the street or anything involving the police or the people or bandits. They are really open because it's a matter of survival. Even as a kid, you're aware of what the adults are talking about, what they're worried about. So at five, I knew that I was in a country that was unstable. I knew that people were suffering. I knew of the culture of silence, that if you spoke against the government, you could be sent to jail and never be seen again. Mm. And when we talk about trauma, for people of the Caribbean, particularly Haiti, all this should be taken into consideration. At five, I already knew that I could lose my parents anytime. It should have been a time of just being carefree and innocent, but you feel the breath of death every day. I remember being on the balcony and I'm playing dolls because you're a kid. At five, you're still a kid. You're dealing with a lot in your head, but you're still dreaming and still doing what kids do. So I'm playing with my dolls on the balcony. So it's not a very tall balcony. We've had someone break in once in the home. They just climb up the balcony and there they were. So I can see clearly what's happening in the street in front of the house. And I remember some details from that day because everything was so vivid. And it's a day I can certainly not forget. So I can see this woman wearing a golden evening jacket, although it's the middle of the day. I can see the chickens running around, pecking, squawking. I can see the sky so blue. And I will always remember the sky. The fact that whatever happens in Haiti, nature always witnesses it without participating in the horror. Nature is always beautiful while the city is burning down. And I remember suddenly the kids playing in the street ran away because turns out that there's this big crowd of people walking the street. And I can hear them. The noise is intensifying. And instead of going inside, I stayed on the balcony to figure out what was happening. Mm-hmm. And I realized that it's a very angry crowd. They are yelling, "Kill the Makuts." The Makuts were basically a Papa Doc and then Baby Doc's army. So very scary men. Whenever you heard someone disappearing in the middle of the night because they were considered a traitor for against the government. It was a Makut going there and taking them to jail, never to be seen again. So it's Duvalier is gone now, and people are very angry at him still. They are very angry at those who were part of his army. And those people are singing, "Kill the Makuts." Then I realize that they're not just protesting and chanting, that there's a man that they're holding prisoner. A few of them are holding. And I realize that is the Makut that they're referring to. And before I can even understand what's going on with the man, suddenly they're putting him on fire. Mm. And I remember just being unable not to watch. At first, he's just yelling because he knows what's going to happen. And then the cries change from the realization that something's going to happen to something actually happening. For one moment, everything froze. I could feel like I was almost next to him. I could feel his pain. It was the one time when it really dawned on me what it meant to be in Haiti, what it meant for the people to just take justice into their own hands, and how unfair it could be, because later I learned that people were not even sure whether he had been a Makut. And it was so easy to just accuse someone of being such a thing and be aggressed and be killed. And I remember my mom and my aunt, they were inside, and at some point they heard the commotion and they came out. My mom putting her hand on my shoulder, and they're the ones who took me inside, but they were so shocked themselves that it took them maybe a few seconds, but it felt like a few minutes to just direct me back inside.
Let me just ask you this. So this angry crowd has aggressed on this man that they're holding prisoner, and then somehow they've set him on fire.
Yes.
In front of you, and he's burning to death.
Yes.
And eventually your mom and your aunt come out because they hear the commotion. Do they also witness that he's burning to death, or has it moved past you at that point?
No, they witnessed it. And that brings the whole question of memory as well, the way you survive incidents like this. So when I decided to start writing about Haiti, I had all those memories and I had the timeline of when they should have happened to make sense. Mm-hmm. And I interviewed people from my family just to make sure that I was right. And yeah. I remember interviewing my mom first, and she said that this never happened, that she has no recollection, that this incident didn't happen. But then we went to visit my aunt, who was also there, and my aunt was shocked. She said, "How can you not remember?" And she was slightly mad at my mom for not remembering something like that. Mm. But as I was interviewing people, I realized that Haitian people choose to forget, or maybe they don't choose, maybe it's a mechanism where many things are just forgotten, because otherwise life would not be possible. It wouldn't be possible for them to carry on if they remembered every bad thing that happened. So when my aunt mentioned it, my mom said, "Well, I guess then it happened," but she really couldn't remember. And they were both there. I remember my mom being there too. And my aunt remembers my mom being there. She remembers both of them coming out on the balcony and taking me back inside. Mm-hmm. And as I interviewed people about other things that happened, people remember little bits and pieces, but it seems that generally people who come from traumatic places like Haiti try to forget, and they've been conditioned to forget. And maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe we forget and things happen over and over. It's one tragedy after another.
We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Do you like science fiction? I'm Carrie Bechet, and if you loved movies like Arrival or Interstellar, then you're going to want to check out my podcast, Hypothetical. On Hypothetical, we tell speculative sci-fi stories interwoven with real science. New episodes every Tuesday, available wherever you get podcasts.
I know that your psyche shuts memories away in order to protect you, and that it may just be unreachable for you. And if you can't handle it, it's an amazing mechanism, really, that, okay, you can't handle this, so you're just not going to remember anything about it until you are able to handle it. I wanted to ask you, what do you think the impact was from that incident? Like, are you afraid of fire? Does a certain type of screaming shut you down or activate you in a way that maybe it wouldn't have otherwise? Or has there been an impact?
I'm not afraid of fire. I think that it's the one incident that caused me to always think about death. Like, death was always there, but I came to realize that day that it's in every corner. And I know that it might sound morbid, but I think about death every day. Every day for me might be the last day. I never take anything for granted. And I think that as a kid, this way of seeing life was a little bit problematic because I had a hard time seeing the beauty and the good in people because, well, we're all going to die and it's going to be pretty soon anyway. So why bother? And I had that very dark way of seeing life, in Haiti in particular. But I was able to overcome that. Making a decision, a conscious decision to focus on what makes me happy, and the understanding that wherever there's violence, there's also peace too, that extremes coexist. And I was able to just accept that, yes, you never know when it's going to be the last day, but it's a good thing that you should live life as if time is limited.
Yeah. Wow. And then I know that we talked a little bit in the beginning about how when you're working with other people, you use writing as therapy, right? Or writing and therapy to help people move through stuff. Was writing helpful for you to come to this place where you can see things differently?
It was, for sure. I mean, it sounds cliche because so many nonfiction writers say it, but writing just did save my life. I come from a violent country, but there was also a lot of violence at home. So it was inescapable. And when I started writing is when I really found the meaning of it all. That, yes, there was a lot of violence, but I could exist outside of it. That there was a part of myself that wasn't confined within the walls of my home or within Haiti. So reading and writing really helped. Reading about other places, about imaginary places. And I'm not a therapist, but I'm trained in creative writing, and I'm also a teacher. So I'm trained in helping other people do that kind of introspection so that they become better writers. So I've been able to help people by sharing my story and also encouraging them to look within themselves and vocalize their own stories. And mm-hmm. it's been helpful. And I always say that even if I happen to positively influence one person, helping them overcome the hurt and the consequences of a difficult past, then my job is done because I've helped one person.
Yes, yes. I love that. And I feel exactly the same about both reading and writing. They were my escape, but they absolutely saved my life. This is just a curiosity question. We're almost out of time, but you know, we talked about Haiti being unlucky, natural disasters, earthquakes, hurricanes, tropical storms, and then the politics of it, and then having ruler after ruler who took advantage of the citizens of Haiti and used them to line their own pockets or to rule authoritatively. I know that Haiti and the Dominican Republic are the same island. How come I don't hear about the earthquakes and the hurricanes and the DR? I don't hear about the politics in that way. Like, why, if it's the same island, do you think they're viewed so differently? Or are they? Is it just from here that we view them differently?
Well, the two countries have very different histories. We started with the same history, with the Spaniards coming to the country, quote-unquote, discovering the island of Hispaniola, yes. Right? But then the Spaniards sold the Haiti side to the French. And that's where our history changes. For a long time, we were just two different countries and not much changed. Even when the Haitian Revolution happened, we've always been two separate entities occupying the same island. And it's really interesting when you go to the Dominican Republic as a Haitian person, you feel that it's the same place. The architecture is a little bit of the same, the hilly roads, and there mm-hmm. are a lot of Haitians there too. But it's just night and day. There are places in the Dominican Republic you really feel like you're in the New World, big buildings, just like in the United States. In Haiti, mm-hmm. the architecture has remained the same for a long time. You feel that you're traveling to the past. There are modern buildings, but most of the architecture there is very rudimentary because, again, a lot of poverty. And a lot of the issues that we have stem for the kind of colorism that existed back then and the clash yes. of the classes and people not being able to work together for something as silly as, oh, look at my skin. It's two shades lighter than yours. I say silly, mm-hmm. but there is strong history of abuse related to skin color. And the fact that after we got our independence, the Haitian side, from our friends, we had to pay a fee. Otherwise, yes. they would not put a stop to an embargo. And all this impoverished the country, a country that was already reeling from the independence war, where one of the strategies used was to destroy all the crops so that the masters could leave the island. So after independence, Haiti was devastated. No more crops. Everything was burned down. There was money to be paid to France. And the Dominican Republic was dealing with that at some level, but it was mostly in Haiti. So our histories are so different that it's no surprise that they can prosper and we haven't prospered. So many other things I could mention, but...
No, I'm so grateful, though. That's a really good history lesson. And I hadn't done much research, but I was just like, wow, you know, Haiti had a huge earthquake, but didn't the Dominican Republic too? It's like, this is what I'm thinking. But that history makes it really clear, especially since they were both colonized by different European countries. So the Spanish colonized the DR and France colonized Haiti. And so the histories would depart right there. And MJ, we could talk a lot more about that if we had more time, but we are actually at time now. I just want to ask you one last thing. As citizens of America, of the United States of America, is there anything that people like me should be doing to help the people of Haiti at the border and in their homeland?
There are two things that we can do here in the U.S. The first one is to make sure that you vote properly, because there needs to be a series of laws about what happened when someone comes to get shelter in the United mm-hmm. States. And the second thing is to keep helping Haiti. There are a lot of organizations that are in Haiti that are run by Haitian people that are doing real work, as opposed to some mm-hmm. organizations that only make an appearance whenever there's a tragedy and nothing gets done. So I would say to be very smart about it, to do a lot of research, to ask Haitian people what organizations we should trust here in the U.S. before you give your money.
That's a huge question. Is certainly if you're sending money to a corrupt country, you want to make sure it goes to the right hands. So tell me where people can find you, because people are going to be looking you up after this. Where should they go?
On Instagram at Badass Black Girl Books, because
yes,
I do have a series for young adults, and it's titled Badass Black Girl. So that explains the name, Badass Black Girl Books. And I'm also on Facebook under Happy OK and MJ Fia.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, MJ. This has been really enlightening. Again, taking time with a painful and tender subject and giving it that life and that light. I think it's really important that we see all different perspectives, and yours is really valuable. So thank you.
Laura and Scott, thank you so much.
Thank you, MJ.
Thank you for listening to The Only One in the Room. Please join us each Tuesday and Sunday for an incredible brand new Only One interview. And every Friday for On My Nightstand, where I'll be reading something that I love. If you have an Only One story you'd like to share or a piece of writing you'd like to submit, please send it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com. From all of us at The Only One in the Room, we wish you dopeness, health, and prosperity.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.